We've had a day now to contemplate the takeaway, I suppose we could say, from yesterday's violence on the Korean Peninsula.
I don't feel all that much clearer on the North's motivation or what's going to happen next than I did 24 hours ago.
Well, here's where we stand. We've already reminded you that the condemnations from the U.S. and the EU of North Korea's actions against the South, Russia and China, by contrast, are calling for everyone to cool down. The U.S. sending an aircraft carrier to the region. President Obama ordering the George Washington into the region. Whether sabers are rattling or tempers are cooling, what's going on in North Korea takes place behind a very thick veil. And we often play music like this from North Korean military parades with a chuckle or two, but it's deadly serious, the isolation of North Korea.
The fourth largest army in the world.
Exactly. And the military might of North Korea is the one clear thing we can say about this country. We wanted to explore a premise that was raised in some of the discussions we had yesterday, that inside North Korea, behind that veil of Stalinist music that the West typically hears about the North, the domestic population of North Korea is contemplating where they stand in the world. And nobody knows the sort of psychology and that sense of isolation from the people of North Korea better than Barbara Demick, who's the author of Nothing to Envy, Ordinary Lives in North Korea. She's the Beijing bureau chief for the LA Times and joins us from Beijing, China, which, of course, is one of the best listening posts into North Korea for a whole variety of reasons. Barbara Demick, we're listening to you on a fairly dicey phone line this morning. How's it going? Barbara, you there? Barbara Demick in Beijing, Beijing bureau chief for the LA Times. Well, we'll try to get her back. She was on the program a couple of months ago.
Yes.
Talking about the sense of isolation of the North Korean people.
They're unaware of what's really going on.
But here, remember the facts. The person that she talked to who came out, and a lot of people come
escaped,
into China,
right?
Escape. And, they defect. They have various reasons for leaving. But they describe that they felt that they were rich because they knew what a banana tasted like, for instance.
Yeah.
That they'd eaten an egg once or twice. That this was a sign of being rich. So that's both an indication of the economic stress inside North Korea, where the harvest was sort of middling.
They're in a food crisis.
And they're dependent on the South for aid, which has been canceled. The aid has been canceled. We have Barbara Demick back now. Barbara, good morning. Barbara, can you hear me?
Now you sound clear.
There we go. Okay.
Yay.
Terrific. It's great to hear. You know, Barbara, we've sort of burned a few minutes away trying to get a hold of you in Beijing, so let's just go directly to the point. How would we begin to know that the people of North Korea are becoming impatient in some sense or dissatisfied with the course of events in each one of these, violent upswings between the North and the South? What kinds of things would people be saying, and what would you be hearing?
I actually did hear this earlier in the year when I was at the North Korean border on the Chinese side, which is the only place that people can talk, and they were saying, gosh, we're tired of this leadership, that people have never lived so badly in North Korea, that it's hard to be hungry, and we're not sure if this new leader can rule when his father is doing such a bad job. I'm talking about Kim Jong-un, who's
sure.
been designated the successor. So I have heard a lot more complaints from North Koreans than I have in the past. Although I'll say that generally when there's one of these outside military crises, it bolsters the regime. It's part of the reason they do it.
How do people respond? I mean, do they say quite candidly to you their sense of fear that the government is giving to them is palpable, it's real, they're worried about an invasion from the South, that sort of thing?
I have never heard in North Korea that they're actually worried about an invasion from the South. Sometimes they fear an invasion by the United States, and that's part of the propaganda that war is imminent. If you read the North Korean propaganda, we're always at the brink of war, but it's usually the United States that's the great enemy. I don't think they're that afraid of the South in their propaganda, the South Koreans are their brothers.
You know, how many times do you think, and again, I suppose it's speculation, but again, it goes back to the conversations that you've had with people who really have an insight into what's going on inside North Korea. How many times can this card of the U.S. as the great Satan or great enemy be played?
Gosh, that's a great question. It just seems like it's infinite. The North Koreans have used it for years to keep their own population in check, and they've also used these aggressions and provocations to extort money from the United States and everybody else. It seems pretty clear from the way they've handled things the last few weeks, you know, first showing a U.S. scientist their highly enriched uranium program, and then this, you know, very blatant attack with no plausible deniability that they're, you know, saying, you know, pay attention to us. And, you know, I've got to say it's been effective in the past. In every case, they make some noise, create a provocation, and they get some sort of reward in terms of aid, fertilizer.
Mm-hmm. So it's worked well for them. Any sign that the government is attempting to deliberately connect Kim Jong-un, the new general, with this latest attack?
We haven't seen that yet. It wouldn't surprise me if they do, but we've heard very little from Pyongyang about what happened.
And so the idea that he's in command and is directing the forces of North Korea proudly against the enemy invader, that's really not a part of the rhetoric at this point.
No, but I would imagine it would be at some point. And, you know, they will say, in fact, they've already said that the South Koreans shot first.
He will be
the glorious defender.
He will be the glorious defender. And that, and again, here's Barbara Demick speaking in the precise language that North Koreans use to describe both their predicament in relation to the South, their predicament in relationship to the United States. We're going to take a short break. Barbara Demick is the author of Nothing to Envy, Ordinary Lives in North Korea, Beijing bureau chief for the LA Times, assessing the reaction inside North Korea from the latest violence and how much the clock is ticking domestically in North Korea as people in the North become dissatisfied with their situation.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.